Deborah Thorne is Associate Professor of Sociology at University of Idaho, where she researches and publishes about economic inequality, debt, and consumer bankruptcy. She's a principal investigator on the nationally recognized Consumer Bankruptcy Project and author of a new study called Grain of U.S. Bankruptcy, Fallout from Life in a Risk Society, which we want to discuss today. Welcome to KBOO, Deborah Thorne.
Hey, thanks for the invitation. I'm from Pendleton, so it's nice to be on an Oregon station.
Yes, at the other side of the state. Great. Well, this new report from the Consumer Bankruptcy Project finds that since 1991, the rate of Americans age 65 to 74 filing for bankruptcy has doubled, and the rate for those age 75 and over has tripled. What explains this rapid rise in bankruptcy filings of the elderly?
Well, what we have concluded is what's behind this rise is what's called a risk shift, so that responsibilities, particularly economic responsibilities that historically had been picked up or covered at by the government or by private employers, have been shifted off onto individuals, and they simply can't cover those costs. So let me give you the examples. We have had a history of employers covering, for example, large employers covering health care, providing health insurance for their workers, and an adequate or more adequate Medicare system. And that has shifted. We are shifting more of the financial responsibility off onto individuals. The same thing has happened with retirement accounts, two of the largest expenditures. Retirement accounts, where we historically had had pensions, and those were managed by people other than the individual. Now we have the 401ks or IRAs, and those are typically managed by people like you and me who have probably no experience in investing. And when we screw up, we lose our retirement.
So even though I think we all know that all social programs have been under attack, really since the 1980s in the Reagan administration, and this has been carried on by both political parties, actually, over the last several decades.
Yeah.
I think many people assume that the right wing has had more difficulty cutting Social Security, which has been a very popular program since it was instituted in 1935 and then expanded with Medicare in 1965. So what explains then the fact that these programs still exist and have not been cut as severely as other social programs, but yet we're seeing the elderly really living more perilously?
Right. There's a variety of ways to undermine or get rid of social programs that benefit people. And one of those is just a flat out frontal assault, and you get rid of it. So we say, well, why haven't we just gotten rid of Social Security? Well, that wouldn't be effective, right? You couldn't really pull that off, because there's a lot of us who benefit from it. We're not going to stand for it being completely eliminated. But a more effective way, if you want to covertly diminish or reduce the costs associated with it or reduce that benefit, is you do simple things like, well, simple strategic things like you extend the age at which recipients can receive full benefits, and you just chip away at that system a little bit at a time in ways that people won't really raise holy cane about. You just do it a little bit at a time, or you let things expire. For example, politicians can let programs or parts of programs expire and just not update them. So it's Jacob Hacker, who is a social scientist, talks a lot about this and discusses it as a form of drift, where you don't destroy it completely. You just let it kind of drift, the benefits kind of drift away and diminish. So, for example, I mean, when we look at full retirement age for Social Security, full benefits are now at 70. Now, you can retire anytime you want. 62, I think, is the earliest you can start drawing. But if you want full benefits, it's now up to 70 years old. So just a little bit at a time, we start undermining. And you know, most people, I didn't know this for a long time, but you have to pay for your Medicare, and it only covers a certain portion of your medical expenses. So it's about 80%. The remaining 20, you have to purchase, and that's getting greater every year is the cost to purchase the additional health insurance to cover what Medicare doesn't.
And
just a little bit at a time.
And certainly health care costs have been increasing dramatically over the last few decades.
Right.
And that is
right.
a major cause of bankruptcy, medical bankruptcy, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, medical reasons, medical and a decline in income, those are the top two reasons for older folks filing for bankruptcy.
And it seems like that confirms the need for single-payer health care system to help such a huge percentage of Americans who are really on the brink of economic disaster with one health care crisis.
Absolutely. I mean, if someone can come up with something better, great, right? But what we have now is not working. People write their stories on the back of the survey. We ask them to share their stories if they feel comfortable with it, with doing so. And these medical problems are taking people out. People, older people who have done everything right, they've worked their entire lives. They have savings accounts. They have 401ks. They've purchased supplemental insurance. And it doesn't take much, and particularly a chronic illness, dementia, cancer, multiple sclerosis, diabetes. I mean, all of these illnesses that often hit us as we age. It's going to be tough to avoid them as we get older. And anything chronic like that, they simply can't, it doesn't matter how prepared they were. They can't sustain those medical expenses. And I had an article come out 15 years ago on medical bankruptcies with Himmelstein and Wohlhandler and Warren. And it the point of the article, we talked about medical bankruptcies. And the point is the majority of Americans are one serious illness away from medical bankruptcy. One. I mean, if I got cancer right now, I'm the primary breadwinner. There goes my health insurance because I can't work, and there goes our income.
But yet there is this focus on the individual's responsibility and moving away of some kind of collective consciousness about the importance of a social safety net for all.
Right.
Citizens.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in the late 1800s, there's some really wonderful writing on the history of how we cared for older people or didn't. In the late 1800s, older poor people were thrown out into the streets or into the poorhouses or were in some instances were actually sold into slavery. White people. Now, I recognize older black people were already in slavery, but older white people were sold into slavery if they were poor. And then, you know, the 1930s and thereabouts, we had a movement in this country where we said, we're not going to individualize the care of older people, people in general, but primarily older people. And it seems to be a policy shift such that we're moving back toward that, and we're saying, good luck in your retirement years. I hope you make it.
What about the effects on people of color in particular, and also people who do physical labor with the increase of the retirement benefit at age 70? I mean, that puts a lot of people at jeopardy who have not only serious illnesses, but who have very demanding work.
Right. So we didn't explicitly break out people of color in our research. Our sample wasn't large enough to do that component. But, for example, other research has highlighted, for example, how much wealth white folks have in contrast to people of color, particularly blacks and Hispanics, and the discrepancy between the two. It's astronomical. A quick Google search will show you the wealth disparity between whites and people of color. And often it's our wealth that can, our wealth is different from our income. So that may be what we have in a retirement account is considered wealth. Home equity that we have in our home is considered wealth. And white people have significantly more than people of color. And those kinds of assets can sustain us to a greater degree if we have a big financial stumble. So we know that people of color have fewer assets to fall back on. And the other thing about extending the age when you're a physical laborer, it's just... it's a no-brainer. When you have women and men who have been standing on their feet and doing physical labor their entire lives and you expect them to go to 70, I've had a fairly comfortable job. I'm going to be lucky to make it to 65. Our bodies give. Like people in the construction industry, those people, men primarily, but they're ready to retire when they're 55. Their bodies are finished.
Or retail workers or lots of other domestic workers, lots of other workers who have to use their bodies or on their feet all day.
On their feet. Retail, where you're standing at it behind a counter or, you know, the machines all day long. It's very, very difficult. I think it's very unrealistic, and I'd love to see some research on this. I don't know of any right off the bat, but at what age should the people who are physically doing physical labor, at what age should they realistically be allowed to retire? It's not 70.
Finally, Deborah Thorne, since bankruptcy and bankruptcy laws were enacted in order to help people escape a lifetime of indebtedness, I mean, is there anything that could also happen in addition to expanding the social safety net and universal health care, anything that could help improve people's outcomes by expanding exemptions or changing?
It's going to have to be policy change. And the two reasons for bankruptcy again and again and again are decline in income. This is regardless of age, unexpected decline in income, and medical costs. One of the things that appears to be creating a problem right now is instability in employment. And again, this is often for people in their working years, not so much in retirement, but that's a struggle for them as well if they're trying to get another job. But instability in the employment sector and very weak unemployment insurance, inadequate unemployment insurance. And the other big issue, which people don't talk a lot about, is the fact that wages have been pretty stagnant since the mid-70s, and there was just a report that came out recently talking about half of Americans, 50%, over 50% of Americans, I believe it was, are paycheck to paycheck still.
Yeah.
This growing economy hasn't benefited most people.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Deborah Thorne, for joining us today on the Old Mole Variety Hour.
You bet. Thanks for the invite.